Always eyes watching you, asleep or awake, indoors or out of doors, in bath or in bed. There's no escape. Nothing is your own, except the few cubic centimeters in your skull. That is a quote by George Orwell in his very famous book called 1984. If you've never picked up that book, I highly recommend it. It's a classic when it comes to new perspectives on privacy. Let's talk about that. The media, ranging from internet newsletters to articles all over the world, have been covering the changing rules and laws of internet privacy. In the last four American elections, debates have mentioned internet privacy and how the future of the United States may depend completely on the decisions we make now. Here with us today on the phone is media analyst Tom Maher. Thank you for giving us a call, Tom.
It's my pleasure, Everest.
So, to my understanding, internet privacy concerns have been triggering the nation for a while now, and you've been monitoring it all for the Associated Press. Can you elaborate a little bit and explain why these issues keep coming up in the daily news?
Well, recently, with Trump's new measures, internet service providers no longer need consent to release your browsing information. That's definitely a major change in the laws of privacy, and I think that's the reason why you keep seeing internet privacy concerns on the news today.
Well, Tom, why would President Trump do such a thing?
Well, the Googles and Facebooks of the world are not restricted by the current law. So Trump, who typically sides with pro-business and less regulations, he felt he had a choice between leveling the playing field by restricting all companies equally or simply removing the restrictions. He chose to remove the restrictions, and hence privacy is now a problem on the internet.
Well, thank you, Tom, for mentioning Trump's law. But for listeners who've never heard about this, just a few weeks ago, our president passed a bill allowing internet service providers to sell private browsing data without any consent at all. This, surprisingly enough, stayed pretty low-key and away from the national media. Do you have any ideas as to why Donald Trump would undermine his own media coverage?
Well, I believe he would only do this if he didn't want people to be aware of the regulations he had just put into play. Because it's all he already has low approval ratings, so keeping this under the radar was his method of not impacting those ratings any further.
I have to agree and say that Trump may have been fairly fearful and may have attempted to conceal his actions, just to try and protect himself from more disapproval. Well, it's been great talking with you, Tom. Thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me, Everest.
Tom, as well as many other media analysts, has given us insight into how the government is trying to be more controlling of our information on the internet. One of the major instances of the government trying to assume more control over the internet was when the FBI asked Apple for backdoor-type access to their phones. The FBI wanted to breach the privacy of a terrorist's phone, but needed Apple's help in developing the software. The Apple CEO Tim Cook was strongly opposed to the government involvement in how he runs his company. Eventually, he was neglected by the executive orders, and the Department of Justice finished their software and collected the San Bernardino shooter's information. In this particular case, critical measures like terrorism were involved. But what does this have to say about normal interactions? Daniel Zwerdling of the NPR News believes strongly in advocating for the Second Amendment rights and our protection from searches and seizures. But these amendments, they weren't created to protect ourselves from our own incriminating data, especially not in internet form. Comparing a 300-year-old document to this modern problem keeps the Second Amendment completely out of context. The Constitution seems to be a fairly common go-to for people without a tenable argument, because of how many bases it covers and how several vague statements can be interpreted in almost any way. Personally, I think we need to press more strongly on the Constitution all of us voluntarily abide by when using services like Facebook and WhatsApp and other social media networks. The terms of service we've all disregarded actually claim that these companies reserve the right to view our conversations and the private data we enter. I don't understand why certain people can't simply accept these terms of service and realize that companies are not using their data wrongfully, but rather to help find potentially incriminating information. Several lawsuits, another go-to for people without better things to do, have been filed against Facebook for quote-unquote wrongfully searching through private message feeds. Yet again, Facebook has every right on the planet to look up and down their own program and at every user who subscribes to them. It's fairly ironic to witness so many people opposed to a free internet coming from a political party that supports selling data. When confronted in public, multiple American conservatives were speechless when explaining what Donald Trump had passed for internet privacy. I think it's logical to acknowledge the fact that nobody has full control over the entire internet, and that if you put something on the World Wide Web, then it's viewable and accessible by everyone. It's devastating when tragedies that could have been simply prevented by the openness of mobile devices happen because people are too nervous about others seeing their conversations on Facebook Messenger. I advise that you listeners educate yourselves as much as possible and develop strong arguments supporting your beliefs, because quite honestly, arguments without backup sound ignorant, and I would not expect that from you all. This concludes my section of the morning podcast. Please stay tuned as I go into further detail with several members of the NSA in the evening.